Elsa Shallert reviews. From Hollywood, we present once again Elsa Shallert, noted interviewer of the celebrated personalities of screen and stage. Tonight, her guests are five gentlemen distinguished in their individual fields of creative expression. They are Mr. Max Reinhardt, Mr. Thornton Wilder, Mr. Richard Hageman, Mr. Basil Rathbone, and Mr. Don E. Gilman. They will have an informal roundtable discussion on whether today is another golden age for the arts of drama, writing, music, motion pictures, and radio. And now, Mrs. Shallert.
Thank you. Good evening, friends. May I, at this outset, express the great pleasure and the high honor it is for me to be able to present our very distinguished guests this evening. And I'm most happy that you were fortunate enough to bring them together at one time. It scarcely is necessary to linger long over a discussion of the prominence of these gentlemen in cultural activities. Their place is known. Mr. Max Reinhardt is a world-famed creator in the theater and has recently established his school and workshop in Hollywood and will present a festival season of dramatic productions in the Hollywood Bowl in the summer. Mr. Thornton Wilder has a far-flung reputation as a novelist and dramatist. His play, Our Town, won the Pulitzer Prize for the finest drama on the New York stage the past season. And his new comedy drama, The Merchant of Yonkers, will be given a premiere presentation by Mr. Reinhardt during his festival season. Mr. Richard Hageman, eminent composer and conductor, noted for his opera, Caponsacchi, which he himself directed at the Metropolitan, only this week achieved new triumphs conducting the first performance of the opera, Die Walküre, in the Hollywood Bowl. Mr. Basil Rathbone is a celebrated stage and screen actor and has just completed the role of Louis XI in the film production, If I Were King. And Mr. Don Gilman, as vice president of National Broadcasting Company, is a prominent figure in the world of radio. Now, gentlemen, we are here this evening to discuss the arts today in this mechanical age. The question of whether they are gaining ground or losing. The question of whether today is another golden age in which the arts may flourish, even as they did in other periods of history. But perhaps it might be well to establish first, what is art?
A rather large question, Mrs. Shallert.
Precisely, Mr. Rathbone. I've been searching for the answer all my life.
Well, surely you have found that answer, Mr. Wilder.
I'm afraid not, Mrs. Shallert. Possibly I've been the bespectacled professor too long trying to read it out.
Mr. Reinhardt, may we have your answer to the question?
As Mr. Wilder says, one can search forever for the answer to this question. It would appear that it is given to us in many different ways. It is my belief that anything that lifts us above the ground, that carries us out of ourselves, may be termed art.
Wonderful. And Mr. Hageman, what is your feeling on the subject?
Mrs. Shallert, this provocative question, which you have put so casually to us, would require more time than this broadcast would permit to answer. But for economy's sake, I would say that great art is the creation of masterpieces of such simplicity and purity of design as to be understandable to everyone.
Very fine. Mm-hmm. Well, so far we've had opinions from the producer, the writer, and the musician. And now I'm very anxious to hear from the actor. Mr. Rathbone, in your opinion, what is art?
Well, Mrs. Shallert, I've had a little time to think over what has been said in the past few moments, and I've jotted down something here on a piece of paper. This is it. Art is man's highest form of expression and belief in his relationship to a divine pattern. I agree with Mr. Reinhardt that the answer to what is art is manifested in many different ways and forms. For instance, it's my feeling that the San Francisco Bridge is an expression of art, just as truly as a Michelangelo painting. Mm-hmm. You behold it and are carried literally on wings to another sphere.
Mm-hmm. That's very fine, also. And now, Mr. Gilman, may we have your answer to the question, what is art?
It seems to me, Mrs. Shallert, that there is very little I could add to what has already been said so excellently. Except possibly the thought that art is the objectified expression of our ideals. We may find ourselves inarticulate in expressing all that we may feel, but very often music or literature or painting speak for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been most illuminating indeed to have heard these varied opinions from you. And now, gentlemen, here's another question that I should like to propound. It is, well, it's in fact the question which really inspired this meeting. Can this period today be as productive as other rich cultural periods of the past? such as the Elizabethan, the Renaissance, the Victorian. Mr. Wilder, do you feel from your standpoint as a writer-creator that this period is an advantageous one for you? I mean, do you have the freedom of expression which you would have had in another age?
I feel, as far as I'm concerned, that the material of which one works is as good as ever. May I say this, however, Mrs. Charlotte? There have been 5 great ages in the history of the world. The Golden Age of Greece was one. But the structure of society then accorded one person in every 5 unlimited leisure for the study of the cultural arts. Hitherto, people have had time in which to train themselves towards the appreciation of masterpieces. Periods of national stress and turmoil do not permit leisure because the struggle for existence and survival commands full quota of energy and time. When one speaks about America in the light of a golden age, one must do so in terms of hope. Days of an art to the aristocracy are over. For the first time in the history of the world, art must address itself to the multitude. The unconscious dreams of some have been brought to reality through art and now shared by the millions. Walt Disney is a splendid example of such an achievement.
And Mr. Reinhardt, do you feel that this vast audience of millions, which Mr. Wilder has just referred to, is perhaps like a burning torch signalizing a new era of artistic understanding and appreciation?
Yes, because today we are presenting art for the great masses, not for the limited few. And that is why I feel today is good for the creative artist. Today can't be the same as yesterday. That will never return. The time when kings and princes subsidized the arts and the artist is gone. But in those days, art was presented for the few. In Salzburg, we had the cream of the world. The wealthy Americans, English, Germans, Italians, and French, they all came with many riches to our theater, and they sat and watched. That was the old theater. Here in America, especially in these Western countries, the sun rises on a new era, an era of art, which will benefit and be enjoyed by the masses, and in which they will in large numbers participate as artists and as apprentices to art. There is an enormous waiting audience in America on the highest degree of mass talent. One scarcely meets any American who hasn't some artistic talent. It is fabulous that one should meet it in such large numbers of people.
Oh, very much I agree with you, Mr. Reinhardt. During the years that I've been privileged to live in America, and especially in these more recent years spent in Hollywood, the high level of mass talent and artistic impulse in this country has been brought home to me very clearly. If I may be permitted to say so, the clearest insight that I have received into the standard of taste and appreciation of the majority has come through letters received from that unseen, devoted audience known as fans. Mr. Wilder spoke a moment ago... excuse me. Mr. Wilder spoke a moment ago about the unconscious dreams of some that have been brought to reality to art. I assure you, if some of the deep and beautiful thoughts expressed to me in some letters which I've been fortunate enough to receive could ever find a voice, there would be much added beauty to the stage, motion pictures, or radio. The majority of people, I'm deeply convinced, are interested in art as an expression, and the greater understanding between people brought about by motion pictures and the radio has created this audience you speak of. And cultivated a fertile soil for art. I believe people are not only ready, but willing to accept only the finest expressions of art.
It's all very interesting to hear, Mr. Rathbone. And it matches my own beliefs.
Well, very interesting. Mr. Hageman, what do you think is the future of the musician of today? Are his opportunities as ample today as they were in the past?
Oh, there is a much larger field for the musician today, Mrs. Salad. The orchestras are so much larger to begin with. And the interpreter, the conductor, has much more to work with than in the days of Mozart, Haydn, or Beethoven. But the composer of today is confronted by one grave difficulty. He is constantly being accused of unoriginality and of writing music which resembles earlier composers. In the days of Beethoven, people listened to music and accepted it for its beauty. But today, if we poor composers write one bar which resembles Puccini, Wagner, or Strauss, we are immediately told that we are copying the great masters. Wagner used whole phrases of Weber, and nobody complained. And it is difficult for anyone but a real musicologist to tell certain passages of Mozart, Haydn, and Handel apart. But let the musician of today write something that has even the same rhythm as a passage from one of the old masters, and immediately criticism descends upon him like a deluge.
You've given us a very illuminating estimate of the situation as regards today and yesterday for the composer, Mr. Hageman.
By the way, Mr. Hageman, how do you like composing for pictures?
Very much, Mr. Gilman. Composing for the screen is a command. I have to write to order, which is quite different from composing when the inspiration moves me. Screen music has developed its own technique of writing, which is fairly complicated because of its exact timing. But frankly, I find it very stimulating. My hope is that eventually motion pictures will bring concerts to the screen so that the millions of people may both see and hear great symphony orchestras and soloists. In your vast field of radio, the seeds for such musical understanding and appreciation have already been planted.
Yes, yes.
And I might say that those seeds have developed more luxuriantly than radio ever anticipated in the brief 20 years of its existence. One of the great inspirations of the radio industry is what it has done for the music lover. You can hear more operas and symphony concerts over the air in a year than the average devotee of former years could hear in a lifetime. I think you will agree, Mr. Hageman, that once opera was looked upon with a certain distrust by the majority of people. Today, grand opera has become a popular form of entertainment over the radio without in any way departing from its high level.
It has been a powerful influence in establishing and maintaining standards. That's a certainty.
Curiously enough, those standards were the ones which radio set for itself. They are not standards set by law or edict. Radio is its own censor, and consequently, its responsibilities are very well defined. It is distinctly different from all other mediums of art, in that it enters the home. The listener doesn't come to it. Therefore, it should deport itself according to ordinary standards of good taste. You shouldn't think of the radio audience in terms of millions, but rather in terms of two or three people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the unit magnified. Radio speaks to a group in a home, and that individual group is multiplied by millions of times, but is essentially an intimate medium.
Yes.
Well, gentlemen, granted that this is a magnificent mechanical age through which knowledge, inspiration, and beauty are disseminated to the largest number of people through the screen and radio. Granted, too, that this spells the highest advancement for the many instead of the few. Still, is this a restricted age for the artist? To be specific, do the motion picture industry and radio, because of the commercial aspect, limit the full creative expressions of the artist? Mr. Wilder, may I ask, how do you as a writer feel about this?
When writing for either the screen or radio, one necessarily is restricted, Mrs. Shallot. But one must realize that when you assemble an audience of many millions, you are almost bound to strike at a certain level if you wish to be understood. It is my feeling that the goal which the greater part of all entertainment should seek to achieve is to supply a thing which is great art both to the trained mind and to the non-reflective. And that is a very daring thing to attempt. But again, Walt Disney can be pointed to, and Charles Chaplin as well, as satisfying the most exacting mind and the receptive soul of the folk. I should like to think of writers going far away and writing a movie and returning when it's completely finished, laying it on one of the great desks for acceptance or refusal. Such a writer should not return until it is in its completed form. But I feel that a story should be born, developed, and finished in one head.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the interference in the earlier stages that suppresses the creative imagination and prevents it from reaching completion. Under one condition, you create a thing. Under the other, you adjust it. When you adjust yourself while working to others, your work ceases to be creative. Adjustment can come later.
Mr. Wilder, do you consider this an inventive or a creative age?
Well, if you want to be pessimistic, Mr. Rathman, you might say perhaps that the last great book was written with the death of Tolstoy. The last great music was composed with the death of Brahms. The last great canvas was painted with the death of Cezanne. At the time being, perhaps, we're in an interim in which the creative forces have turned to mathematics and physics. But the creative forces are still there, and when we return to the other art, everything will be ready and waiting.
Including a vast, sympathetic, and hungry audience that waits anxiously to be entertained with fine and worthwhile things. That great audience that has sensed the meaning of beauty and so can never be completely satisfied. A hungry receptivity which is the inspiring challenge to all further creation.
That is it, Mr. Rathbone. We hear so much about this not being good and that not being good for the masses. I am of the opinion that the great masses have far better taste than they are given credit.
Yes, right. 1,000 times.
And in art, they want the good. They will not accept the bad.
Yes.
We have proof of that constantly. The public of today, I think, is very much like the public of ancient Greece, the Golden Age Mr. Wilder referred to earlier this evening. In ancient Greece, the great poets wrote for the masses. They didn't write for the few. Oedipus Rex is an example of the classic tragedy written directly for the people. And when we hear a great symphony conductor like Toscanini, we realize what a high status in artistic appreciation the mind of the public has reached.
Yes, yes.
Of course, Mr. Reinhardt, the brilliant popular radio success of Mr. Toscanini could never have been accomplished, in my opinion, 10 years ago. It has taken radio until now to prepare both itself and the vast radio audience for the great work of this famous conductor.
That again, Mr. Gilman, is another miracle of this marvelous age in which we live.
And while we're on the subject of radio, may I be permitted to say that radio today seems to me to be less restricted than the moving picture. It has been much more courageous. It has gone out and experimented in its medium, and when Shakespeare or Ibsen are presented, or when the poems of Browning or Shelley or Keats, of Byron, Rupert Brooke are given, the response of an audience has been deeply gratifying.
That is true, Mr. Rathbone. On the other hand, radio cannot give you the visual impression of a Robin Hood. That is, not yet.
Ah, yes, but what about television?
Well, we'd better not go into that. Television could well be the subject of another of these roundtables, I think.
At least it is another boundary to conquer.
Yes, practically every other field has been pioneered.
Mr. Hageman, what do you think the future of music will be? What form will it take?
It will be less complicated, of that I'm sure, Mrs. Shallop. It will be as the music was in the early days, simple. And it will be listened to just for the joy of hearing. The very modern music is interesting, but generally it lacks personality. It all sounds more or less alike. An artistic revolution, I'm sure, will take place. Of course, things can't go on as they have in the past years. Creation in music has been at a comparative standstill. Someone will come along who will start composing on entirely new lines, just as Wagner did, just as Debussy did. I feel that someone who will arrive on a new horizon will write very simple music again, like Bach, for example, which at least is simple to hear. And then we'll have a renaissance of music. Things will be done for the sake of beauty and not for affectation.
Mr. Hageman, could there be a Beethoven today? Would this routine of high-paced, busy living permit the artist to compose with the serenity and with the prolific intensity of the past?
I don't see why not. It depends entirely on the man. Mm-hmm. You don't have to live with the crowd. After all, the strong man is the one who stands alone.
What an inspirational thought.
Yes, isn't it? Mr. Rathbone, from the actor's point of view, what would you say that the future holds for the stage?
I'd say, Mrs. Shallot, the future of the stage holds the richest promise. For the reason that the theater, and I think Mr. Reinhardt will probably agree with this, is witnessing a rebirth. It has new spirit and new determination. And I think its greatest promise is reflected in the success of the actor-manager. Examples are Helen Hayes, Catherine Cornell, the Lunts, Noel Coward, to name but a few of the outstanding ones in this country. The actor-manager loves his work. Therefore, his primary objective is to do something that is going to be his expression of belief in the divine pattern. He produces his own shows, not because he primarily wants to make money, but because he has something he wants to say, something within him that he feels impelled to say. The artist, in our profession, is the man, and always will be the man, who works for the cause of preserving and elevating the standards of his profession. And when he is that earnest about his work, there is invariably the audience waiting to hear him. Not only in the cities and large towns, but in the country, where people live and understand the grace of spring, the loveliness of summer, the glory of an autumn, the magnificence of a winter. People who are close to nature and consequently have a deep sympathy for what is beautiful and what is inspirational.
Again we agree, Mr. Rathbone. I see you too believe in the power and the absolute necessity of the close and magnetic association between audience and the actor.
Definitely, Mr. Reinhardt. Because for the full expression of the artist through the medium of acting, there must be a live player and a live audience. In the moving picture, one part of that essential whole is dead because it is the shadow of the substance. That does not mean that moving pictures cannot be an art. It only means that they have a far more difficult task to accomplish.
Mr. Wilder, may we have your reaction to the thought that out of this period of change and turmoil, there possibly will rise a person, a spirit, a voice, that will carry a message fraught with new meaning?
It is to be hoped, Mrs. Charlotte, that should this voice speak in this land, it will be heard and understood. It is unfortunate but true that in the past, chief American authors, the ones we admire today, grew up unrecognized and at war with their surroundings. They were refused recognition. Hawthorne was regarded as the greatest novelist of his day. Today we realize that recognition should have gone to the immortal creator of Moby Dick, to Herman Melville. Among the poets, Longfellow and Whittier were acclaimed. Now we know that that acclaim should have gone not to Longfellow, but to that tormented soul, Edgar Allan Poe, not to Whittier, that strange gypsy, Walt Whitman. The great essayist was not Emerson, but Thoreau. Emily Dickinson was a recluse and never received the tribute to which he was entitled. Mark Twain was regarded as the great humorist of his day, but he was unhappy and embittered, as well as the sharpest critics of his time and country. In other words, the keys of the city are always being handed to the person that the public can understand, rather than being tendered to the person who is at war with the American society. America's coming of age will arrive when the artist makes his peace with the American civilization and is listened to by it. America heretofore has repelled the artistic voice. The artistic voice has been driven into an antagonistic position. Our hope is that America will grow into maturity that the artist can move around without being at war with his surroundings.
Perhaps, Mr. Wilder, that millennium is close at hand.
You can only dare to hope so.
Mr. Gilman, is this tremendous medium of radio? In this medium, what do you think the accomplishments will be in the next 10 years as far as artistic expression is concerned?
That would be very difficult to say, Mrs. Charlotte. Radio is still young, despite its great development and adult stature. I think of it as a medium of the arts, rather than an art itself. It is hard to say just yet what it is going to do or be, but I think the most important development will be in the writing for radio. Radio writer must be as accurate in his use of special technique as a dramatist is in writing for the theater. This, it seems to me, calls for a special finesse, a fine discrimination in his writing and in his technique. Using sound subtly gives point to action, or what dramatizes the words you hear into a living, vital scene. Sound to radio is like the fine lines of an etching, which may not be discernible except when observed under a microscope, but still gives artistic value.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you regard as radio's highest achievement to date from a cultural viewpoint?
My opinion that radio's highest achievement has been the bringing of the works of the world's finest artists into the richest and the humblest homes alike. Mm-hmm. It has made available to the large majority of people resources of music and literature which they never could have secured in any other way. It has made fine music and fine drama universally appreciated.
And may I say, Mr. Gilman, that no medium of the arts can hope to accomplish more than to unite people of all classes through the simple and moving language of music and poetry and drama.
I think we have felt that, Mr. Reinhardt. That has always been one of our ideals, along with a special function which we have to become a broad medium for public service.
And now, Mr. Reinhardt, I should like to ask you a final question, and it's about the theater that you know so very well and love so much. As a producer and creator, do you feel that we're coming into a new period of stage presentation, a new period of writing for the theater?
I feel very sure of that, Mrs. Charlotte. I think soon there will be an absolutely new form of theater. Something that has never been seen before, and this Western country is the place where it will first be heard. Yes. It is my hope that the theater, films, and music will all work together. With this new art, we will have an equality among all people, And I also feel in sympathy with your question to Mr. Wilder a few moments ago. I think a new poet-dramatist will come forth very soon, who will be a kind of redeemer, preaching through his art a sermon of love and understanding that will cure the ills of the world. The old days are gone. We are entering a new age, and it is an age in which beauty will rule, and in which the richest man of all will be the one who has the gift of happiness.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Reinhardt, for your inspiring closing words. And my deep thanks, gentlemen, to each one of you for the great pleasure of your wonderful visit this evening. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Shallard.
You have heard Elsa Shallard, interviewer of celebrated personalities of the stage and screen. Tonight, her guests have been Mr. Max Reinhardt, Mr. Thornton Wilder, Mr. Richard Hageman, Mr. Basil Rathbone, and Mr. Don E. Gilman. Their roundtable discussion dealt with whether today is another golden age for the arts of drama, writing, music, motion pictures, and radio. Frank Hodek and the NBC Orchestra have just played I'll Follow My Secret Heart from Conversation Piece by Noel Coward. Next week, Elsa Shallard will bring to our microphone another interesting personality from the entertainment world. This program has come to you from the NBC studios in Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.